This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
We got your favorite sports and we got your favorite team.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Way out in California, but we represent the scene.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Pat, Joe, and Tweety are here to make some noise. We got a podcast. We're basically unemployed. Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Yeah.
Big Red,
Big Red,
go.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Pat.
I'm Joe.
And we have a special guest today, wide receiver from the 90s, part of a couple national championship teams, one of my favorite names in Husker history, Kenny Cheatham. How you doing, Kenny?
I'm doing okay. How are you guys doing this morning?
Oh, we're good, man. It's always good when we can have a fellow Twitter trash talker join us and talk about how much Iowa sucks.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm being nice on there. I try to keep it PG-13.
We go pretty hard sometimes.
Oh, man. You know, they set themselves up for it. You know, I let it, hey, they throw in the bait. I'm going to bite it sometimes. So,
oh, yeah.
Give them what they want.
Not only will I bite it, but I will look for it.
Oh, yeah.
I will search it out.
Hey, bring me the smoke. I want it. Just bring it here.
Bring me the smoke.
So, I don't know. Like, one of my favorite positions just always growing up watching football was the wide receiver position, which is probably a little bit weird growing up watching Nebraska football. But you were in it. You played wide receiver on a team that, you know, just ran and ran and ran and ran. What's the experience like for a mid-90s Nebraska wide receiver?
Well, it was kind of different because we didn't do the traditional how you see these schools now where the Coach Osborne even don't call the plays. We win the plays. So if you guys ever notice and you pay attention to a lot of the old films, you'll see us standing by them. It's always the wide receivers. So it was kind of hit and miss when you were actually out there on a pass play. So that's why you saw the ball being spread around as much when we did throw it, because you might have come off and then they called another formation and then someone else was out there on the pass play. So it was, you know, we knew what our job was. As a pure receiver, it was hard for me, of course, you know, because I was a natural, I've always played receiver. A lot of the other guys had converted to receiver. So it was rough because I said, oh, it's 3rd and 8. I know I'm going to throw it. Then we run an outback trap. Yeah, we get hurt. I'm sitting there like, oh my God, coach, you know, it's kind of hard. It was hard to stay motivated sometimes. Like, oh my God, I know we're going to run it. So
3rd and 8, I know we're going to run it.
So what was more fulfilling, like that touchdown catch or like catching a defensive back sleeping and just making snot bubbles?
It's always catching the football and for a touchdown pass, but we banged those guys up so much that at the beginning of the game, they would always be talking. And by the end of the game or halftime, you would see them running away from the chop blocks or moving away from or looking for the crack back. You know, that was funny to us. And we took pride in catching them because we all know defensive backs, man, no matter what they do, you can throw the ball 50 yards over someone's head and their mouths are running. You see it in the NFL, you see it in college, and it's like you didn't even do anything. They're just talking. They're just talking. So that's why when receivers score, now I'm going to celebrate and hurt you a little bit. But it was good to catch them. It was just funny how you see the game. Excuse me. Allergies give me a little bit. Transition from big talking to falling back and not wanting contact. And then you see the running backs running by them. So it was interesting to see.
So how does – so you said you were like a pure receiver and you're from Phoenix, right?
Right, right.
So how in the world – does a guy who grows up catching the football in Phoenix wind up in Lincoln?
Man, it was an interesting story. I actually, when I originally was being recruited, going into my senior year, I wasn't going to even play football. Well, I was just coming out late because I was a 3-sport. I was highly considered in track, the number 2 or 3 sprinter in the nation coming out on the top 150 in basketball. And I had went on a summer tour, you know, the old basketball, not as many as it is now tournaments. Did really, really well. And then coming to my senior year, You know, I had was coming off a good junior year. I was defense as well. A lot of people don't know I was All-State as defense as well. So going in, I come out and I play. And then my junior year, we had all taken our test scores. A lot of my friends had passed. I didn't pass on my first attempt, and then I took it a second time. So my score jumped up drastically. So they flagged it. So they were, you know, how that goes, ACT, SAT. Like, hey, how did his test score jump up so much in between this time? Not taking into consideration my first time taking it, we had played in Tucson, which is a two-hour drive, came back home that night, and then had to test that morning. So I actually was Miami. I was going to go. My mom said, no, son, it's not what you think. You know what I mean? New Heisel was at UCLA. I was hearing he was going back to Colorado. Carl Durrell was at ASU at the time. He was saying he was going back to Colorado. Tennessee, Lovie Smith, was the recruiter for Arizona. They didn't send me my plane ticket two times to go there. I eventually went after I got my test score, and I let them know what I thought about that. Nebraska was the one that was consistent. So a lot of the other sports were like, they wanted me, but they backed off once I didn't have my test scores. And they were like, if you get it, you know, go junior college a semester, then we'll bring you in that next semester to play. Nebraska was the one that stayed there. Now, me, I'm saying, hey, if I can go there, eight-man fronts, let me do my thing, you know, I will be fine. So they were one of my top five, but they were the ones who stayed most consistent. And then, you know, we're looking at the other schools, coaching changes, things like that. That's big to a kid. You don't want to go somewhere and then the next year, the whole
staff. Yeah.
You look at something like that, you know, Coach Osborne had been there. Solich, all the coaches had been there.
Yeah.
For a good amount of time. So it's that stability. You know what I mean? So I was 17 when I got the league. They used to call me Young Kenny, all my teammates. Yeah. They said, oh, you're young. And I was like, yeah, you know. So I was in my third year before I was able to buy beer or something. So, you know, I just ended up going there. They stayed with me. When I passed my test, I literally passed my last test. Well, got the results back. I knew I had passed it. And I was in Lincoln maybe 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later. So you get what I mean? So when I got I didn't have time for prep for anything. It was like I got my score. I called him. I said, hey, I got my score. And all the other schools started calling back. And I was like, right. Hey, you know, now you're calling me and trying to go this roundabout way of doing it, you know?
What was the culture shock like going from Arizona? There's a huge crossover. Arizona is beside, it goes Lincoln, California, and then Nebraska for alumni organizations. So there's a big Husker group. Right. I've been to a couple of Husker watch sites in Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
They're nuts.
Yeah. It's a big group out here. I think it's one. I know it's a big one here, and I think it's one in Tucson as well. That's pretty big.
Yeah.
Southern Arizona branch.
Ride goes to the one in Phoenix. He goes to Moon Shadows.
Okay. Yeah. I know exactly where that one's at. I used to eat lunch over there sometimes. Okay, that's cool. I used to eat lunch. I worked right down the street, like literally 5 minutes, and I would go over there and eat lunch sometimes.
The Moon Shadows played at Nebraska.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And Lindstrom, Roger Lindstrom.
Yeah, that is that bar in that plaza. Yeah, exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Talking about a bar in Tucson owned. That's what's crazy about Nebraska is you guys are talking about like some random guy and you're like, yeah, I know him. And it's 1,000 miles away.
But so what was the culture like, the culture change? What's the word I'm looking for? Culture difference, I guess. Phoenix and Lincoln.
To worry about locking my doors as far as that aspect. As far as being around people, that was a big deal. I grew up, so you know, you get a lot of deep inner city kids who've never been around white people, and they're like, oh, but me, I grew up, my friends were all nationalities, I mean, all races. So I just came in like, okay, the biggest shock for me was winter.
That's
a whole different conversation for another day. My first experience with what is this was I had on a tank top one day, I had on some shorts, and it was sunny. And I'm like, okay. And I ran out of the dorms, Old Harper, and I just felt something burning my skin. And I had no clue what it was. And it was the wind, because it was like 30 degrees and the wind was blowing. And I have never experienced anything like that in my life. I didn't know ears could burn.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember, I think I stopped in midair running. You know, the little pyramid by the dorms in between Harper, Smith, and the little thing, little steps. I think I ran up about three and did like a 360 while running and ran right back in the dorm and started touching the crack. I was like, this is unbelievable. I called my mom. I was like, I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can go to school today. So
your skin had never been exposed to temperatures like that before.
Whew. Listen, brother, I'd rather be hot than cold any day.
Sure.
I left Nebraska. Sure. Like, I graduated from college when I was 24 because I'm dumb as hell.
Right.
I graduated from college when I was 24. And I mean, I'm talking 4 days. I was in Chicago and I was like, it's so cold here. A year later, I'm gone. I've never gone back.
Back to California.
Hey, when people saw me talk about the Michigan State game, I was serious. That was horrible. I was sick for like 2 months after that. It was so cold. I was like, this cannot be life. I was literally on the sideline, like, what in the world is this, Mitch Crank? He was like, Kenny, you okay? I was like, no.
So this cannot be life.
He put me in the in lounge. And I stayed in there the rest of the game, except for maybe the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game. This isn't it.
At the game where y'all whooped Saban's ass?
No, this was when I went back to Lincoln. Was that 18 or 19 when they played Michigan State? What was it, 9-6?
The Pickering game.
And everyone was like, "Yeah, this is the coldest. This happened to be the coldest day of the year." Well, aren't I the dummy for being there on that weekend? that was bad. That was horrible.
We watched that from a Hollywood bar in the safety of the warm weather.
Lesson learned.
Yeah, you do not want to be at a field goal fest in sub-zero weather.
Oh, man, no more winter games for me.
Well, one game that, wasn't necessarily warm or cold, but one that everyone remembers that you were a part of was that Mizzou game in 97. Mm. Obviously everyone remembers that final play of regulation, but that drive that led to the Wiggins to Davison touchdown, you had three huge catches on that drive. Was that like the moment you'd been waiting for, as a wide receiver in that Husker offense?
Well, Coach Osborne had told me, prior to that game that I was going to be the deciding factor in how the game had come out. If you go back and watch the game that year in 97, I was nursing a quad strain the entire year. It had happened in the preseason before the season. Makavika had up on the back of my legs. I strained my quad and had a high ankle sprain. So that's why I ended up missing an Akron game, the first game of the year in 97. So I was pretty much playing with that the entire year. So he had held me out the game prior and was like, we're going to need you next week. He was like, you're going to be the deciding factor going into that game. And I was like, okay, coach. And he said, I want to see how they play you on the first couple of plays. So if you look at the first couple of plays, they throw a ball to me, pretty much one of the same plays that Scott threw a little low that I had to go down and catch in the very first part of the game. So he was like, okay. He came back and he said, yeah, they're scared of you, so they're going to play you a certain way. So I kind of expected it. I'm looking forward to it. I expected it, but it turned out good for us.
Yeah,
it turned out good for us.
Yeah,
that's like one of those games that it. I mean, it might be the most famous Husker game of all time.
Maybe. Well, to certain fans, it is. Maybe outside of Husker fans, it certainly is because of the drama of the moment.
As Husker fans,
we have so many different games. I'm going to pick the three Natty titles as my favorite.
But the 97 one doesn't exist without that
game. Oh, true. True.
The other ones were kind of clear cut.
Right.
Yeah.
There was really no, it was just like they're going to. Yeah. 94, I mean, going into the game was like, oh, we might lose. 95, we're feeling pretty confident.
Yeah.
97 was such a weird year. And then that Missouri game, like, when I think about, like, Husker games when I was a kid, like, I mean, I remember exactly where I was, who I was with. I remember everything about that game.
Do you think that game cost Nebraska the shared national title? Because you creamed Peyton Manning.
Yeah, like, I think so.
His last game was an embarrassment.
Yeah, I think so. I think we knew
Yeah.
Here's a couple of things leading up to that. Summer, tour days. Coach Osborne always, if you talk to anybody playing on the team, always had a picture of the bowl game, national championship game. And it was would tell us how we were doing. He called that game in tour days in camp. He said, we're going to go undefeated. He said, our toughest game is going to be down in Missouri. It's going to go down to the wire. He said, they mirror us. They run our offense. They got a good quarterback. and he said, they mirror us to the T. It's going to go down to the end. He said, we have better players, but they run us. It's going to be like playing ourselves. So if you watch us, we weren't in like, we were happy. But we weren't like in this shock, like some teams that come back in there and like this shock.
Yeah,
we expected it. So we went into that and at overtime with the confidence already. So it was one of those where you're like, okay, he said it, you know. And there's a couple of games he called like that that people never bring up, but he called them. So when you see our face, and then I tell people, they say, you know, I noticed you guys weren't acting a certain way. He called Arizona State game in 96.
He did?
He called that game. He stopped practice. We had the soundboard out there for the crowd noise, and he said it's going to be loud. We had the bad snaps. We had the fumbles. Everything that happened in that game offensively happened in practice. Because we transitioned to Ernest Center and all of that. And the crowd, wasn't the noise, wasn't that bad. He said, listen, guys, he said, they're going to have something to improve. We hung 70-plus points on this team last year.
Yeah.
It's going to be a late game for us. You guys are going to be sitting around all day.
Yeah.
And he called everything that happened. And he said, this stuff is going to happen in the game, so we have to be sharper. And everything that happened in the game happened in practice. So if you see our faces when we're walking off, yeah, we're lost, but we're like, you know, we're not like devastated. We're like, oh, okay. Bus ride.
Coach said it.
Plane ride was quiet. Everybody was tired. That was a late game for us. I mean, we were tired, worn down. You know, we're coming from that to here in the heat on a late game. Our walkthrough was late. I think it was at like 12, 11 that night or something, which was like 1.
Oh, man.
Nebraska time. Because they had a dedication to Coach Frank Cush here. You see what I mean? So who plays it? Who doesn't walk through that late, you know, for the morning? Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. Now, from being from Arizona, did that like hurt even extra a little bit more?
Man, I still have to hear about that. They still play it on the Fox local news here.
Really?
They still play that game. They still play that 96 season.
Oh, my God.
That game is on all the time. And they're still doing interviews about that game when they show it as if they won a national championship.
That's the lesson. Don't score 70 on anybody. Because I saw a game in 81 in Syracuse where we had beaten Syracuse 72 to something the year before. And I went and saw the game in Lincoln and we lost 18-17. Wow. And I'm sitting in the Syracuse section in Nebraska clothes because I bought the tickets in New York. Little kid crying as I leave. It was awful.
Yeah, man. I still have to hear Facebook. They talk about it. Hey, man, Arizona State. Oh, were you here? Oh, yeah, you were here when Arizona State beat you guys. Kenny, I forgot that. Oh, my God. I'm like,
yeah.
but you never talk about the we scored a half century before halftime the year before, you know, and we start bringing out people out of the stands and you know, the vendors and the play, the popcorn guy. So we score 100. So, you know, hey, whatever.
And that would have been funny if you guys would have let, like, I guess there wasn't a little red, but if you would have let like Herbie come in and play quarterback for the last series against Arizona, that'd have been great.
Well, I know that's the thing about Nebraska in those days. And I feel like when you're a team like that and they beat you, that's their win forever. Like you're saying, mm-hmm. it's like mm-hmm. the Yankees, the best World Series in baseball are the ones where the Yankees lose to mm-hmm. to America because they love to see the powerhouse get chopped down. And so, yeah, for Nebraska, 72-8 win against Arizona State back then, I was like, yeah, we're going to have two or three of these a season. But for them, when they win that game, it's like, all right, this is going to last us for 20 years.
Right, right. And that's what I tell people when we always talk about programs. And what's funny to people, oh, you're so anti-Arizona State. And I tell them, no, I'm from Phoenix. I'm from South Phoenix. I grew up 15 minutes, 20 minutes from your campus. As a high schooler, we partied on that campus. My aunts and uncles went to York School. I grew up Arizona State fan. So I just tell them, here's the difference between certain programs. You hope to win, Nebraska expected to win during that time.
Yeah.
So We didn't jump in, holler, and hoop and holler when we beat people like that. Because we expected to win. I said, when you guys hope to win and you get that win, you have that celebration. You hang on to it. I said, that's the difference between winning programs and losing programs. I said, we expected to win. You guys are still holding on to something. I said, let it go. I'm not bitter. I said, but let it go. You should have achieved a lot more if that was your game-breaking win.
Yeah.
Your school win, you should be doing a lot better. You know what I mean? So, yeah, they hang on to that thing, man. I tell you, when I tell you they hold on to that like it's a national title, brothers, they hold on to that like it's a national title.
Yeah. Well, luckily you can hold on to national titles like they're national titles. Sorry, Rod.
I just bling them. Bling.
So what do you think's going on right now? What's the problem?
Oh, man. I just think – you mean with Scott as the coach and what's going on? I just think there's just been
the last, I don't know, 8 years.
You know, I kind of stepped away for a while after the whole Callahan fiasco. A lot of us were mad on with the firing of Coach Solich and how that went down, and then the Callahan situation and hearing how he was treating guys coming back and all of that. And then Pelini was there, and I like Bo Pelini. I think Bo Pelini rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I think if you were going to fire someone like Coach Pelini or Coach Riley, you bring in someone with a winning record, a track record of winning. I'm a West Coast kid. I get to see the Oregon State. I got to see the Oregon State games. I know he was at under 500, barely at 500. I had a couple of my former high school teammates and friends who went to Oregon State. So to go from a guy winning, once again, 9 wins a year to a guy winning underneath that.
Yeah.
My message is that sending the kids, and then you're like, okay, we hired this guy, but now we have to get rid of him because our former player is hot right now. We're going to bring him in. What message is that sending to kids? So yeah. I think everything has been totally torn down, and now it's going to be built back up. And it's going to take a little, it's going to take some time because it wasn't torn down overnight. You know what I mean? It was torn down over years. And
That's a sound clip right there.
We just have to be patient. We have to be understanding. And then you're dealing with a new dynamic of kid. Social media, look at me now. What looks good, likes, you know, everybody does stuff for likes. You know, when we just went to the school, I like this, you know, now it's about me. You know?
Transfer portal and everything.
Yeah, it was team. You can have teammates and not even really deal with them because you got social media. That's your world, you know? So I just think there's a restructuring building going on. It's going to take time. Like I said, as fans and former players, we have to be understanding and just be patient. I mean, it's hard. Trust, we all know it's hard. You know, when we lose and we see this net, trust me, we text each other like no other. Can you believe this?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it has been years. I still got a text in one of my old phones from when I lit them up from that Texas Tech game when they hung the 70. The conversation wasn't nice. And the Colorado game, the 6th touchdown, Chris Brown game. The conversation I had with them was not nice. Just like it wasn't with us.
Which one are you talking about? 2001?
Not our Chris Brown, the other Chris Brown.
Late in the season.
Colorado running back that we got drafted because of that game.
I said the singer Chris Brown?
That one.
Might as well have been. You mentioned the social media and stuff, and that's something I noticed because in other circumstances, in any situation where you need camaraderie, where you need a unit, this is just something I observed in a situation I was familiar with where I was in a cast in a show, and most of the good material we wrote was when we were off stage screwing around with each other backstage. Now at this same theater in the second city, when the cast is off stage, they pick up their phones and they are looking at their phones and there's no interaction. That's not a direct parallel to football. But, like, again, these guys are probably not interacting with each other off the field and, you know, socially as much as they would, because guys are, you know, keeping in their little circle. And like you said, getting likes, which are coming from outside the program. Do you think, like, a moratorium on cell phones, like, obviously not for the season, but, like, okay, practice, your phone's away until, like, you know, I don't know how much it comes into play with football players in practice. They probably are putting that shit away. But I just wonder if you think that does play into camaraderie with the team.
I just think the difference, like, with us is, one, what a lot of people have to understand during my time there, and you guys were, we were all friends.
Yeah.
All of us were friends. It wasn't, oh, we don't mess with this crew. We don't mess with this crew. We were all teammates, but we were all friends. It was nothing for me to call Jason, Peter, or Grant, and those guys. Like, what the hell are you guys doing? Are we over here? We're about to have a party. We'll be over there in a minute. They'll call us. You know, what are you guys doing? You know, we're over here playing a video game. What are you playing? Killer Instinct. We'll be over there in a minute. it would be the households coming over. You know what I mean? Yeah. It wasn't like this random person from the house. We would be at each other's houses. We spent time together. We were roommates.
Yeah.
Some of us might have went to school with just a regular traditional student, but majority of us lived together. We went to school together. We rode together. We rode to practice together. Of course, we ate together. We were in the weight room together. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So we were really friends. You know what I mean? So when we go back for the spring game and you see us, we're still those 17, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids joking on each other because we were friends. You pay attention to us on social media when we had each other next because we were friends. I'm going to say something, and we laugh and chuckle. But I just think when I can get all of my validation or a pat on the back from someone liking and corresponding on what I'm posting on social media, I don't need the other stuff. You know, it's like someone who brings their drama to social media for their point, just to hear everybody say, yeah, you're right. I understand. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, it's feeding that ego of, yeah, I am right. Instead of getting the balance of, no, that's not right. You know what I mean? So if I want to get my chest patted, I can put some on social media and everyone go pat my chest, liking it, retweeting it, or saying, good job. Yeah, you did this. You know, it feeds that monster. So I don't need the other stuff. You get what I'm saying? I
mean, Oh, yeah. So how many of these impromptu meetings with players involved, like Jason Peter and Christian Peter wrestling matches?
You know, CP was older, so that dude was hilarious, man. Christian was funny. It was certain dudes on that team, man, that were just characters, and you can't make them up. You can't draw them. Because they were like caricatures, man. Like, Lawrence was hilarious. I understand my friend Don, and he had those issues. You know, I love him. That was my buddy. But Lawrence took care of me as a freshman. You know, but he was funny. Lawrence would tell us, oh, you guys are a bunch of idiots. I'm going home. And then he would leave. You know, he wouldn't be around the foolery. Christian was hilarious. He'd be like, come in here, lift weights. You know, they make it better. You know, he was just, this guy was like this funny dude where you just laugh at some. But Clint Childs, these guys were like hilarious. You know what I mean? You're like, this dude is terrible.
And that environment protected those guys. The friendship, the camaraderie. You look at what happens to all these guys when they get outside of that.
Right.
And Osborne said it about Phillips. He made that comment, you know, it's controversial, but he said football is the only thing keeping this kid from real bad shit.
Right.
And lo and behold.
Right.
So, you know, those are some of the benefits of this, you know, of the team and of stuff. We could get into other stuff about football, but for guys like Lawrence Phillips, football was the only thing saving that guy.
Right.
And people were not able to find a way to make it all work to keep him, you know, where he needed to be.
Right. Yeah. He had his demons, bro. And I used to work in that field for a while. And then I understood it then, but then working in that field, you really understand it. There's, like I said, with him, it's always this picture, this monster. He came in a room. You guys ever met him? Nicest dude you ever met. What people don't talk about is how highly intelligent he was.
Yeah.
You know, they give you this, isn't that, which they're going to always show that bad. But this guy, if he can't give you a shirt off his back, was a good dude outside of that stuff. It saved him being in that team environment. The same thing with like Farley. When he was kicked off, we were like, no, no, no.
Right.
He needs to be around us. You know what I mean? He needs to be with us. We understand, but, you know, keep him here. Keep him at practice. Keep him doing stuff, even though he's not playing. Don't just remove him, because we understood as his friends, that's not going to be good.
No, he's detached from everything that had held him down, that had held him into reality. You can't cut that off to a person.
Right.
We got about five more minutes, and then we'll let you get to your weekend. But I want to head back to that 97 season. If the bowl and or playoff system had been in place properly, and you had gotten to play Michigan, how do you think that game would have gone?
We beat them.
Yeah,
we beat them with ease. I mean, I think people underestimate and undervalue that Tennessee team that we played. One, they played Washington State, which was lower ranked. You know, they always like to bring up Charles Woodson. That was one guy. You had Dehani Jones. You had the running back, Chris Howard. You had Greasy. I think Ty Streets was on that team. Couple more cats. But then what I tell people, you take Brady out of it. Brady wasn't the starter. Don't tell me Brady and what he did. Brady wasn't the starter. If everyone knew Tom Brady was going to be what he is, as he is currently, he would have been the number one pick in the draft.
He got beat out by a Yankees third baseman.
Right. So I tell him, omit that. So I tell them, when you look at that Tennessee lineup, and I always tell people, go back and look at the teams that we beat. You have Peerless Price, Marcus Nash, Cedric Wilson, Andy McCullough, Jermaine Copeland. Jamal Lewis, Travis Henry, John Price, Peyton Manning, and I'm forgetting players. Now
they won the Natty the next year,
right? Without Peyton Manning, defensively, you have my childhood friend, been my teammate since we were eight, Terry Fair, who was first round pick before Randy Moss. You had Terry Fair, Dwayne Goodrich, another first round pick, Raynock Thompson, Leonard Little, Deion Al Wilson. Big Henderson. Look at that roster.
You got a dozen NFL guys on there.
Absolutely.
Washington State has a lineman and the most overrated number two pick in history.
I concur with that.
And just to, I know I always take us out longer than we're supposed to go, but just the
Washington
thing. Washington might be covering you, so maybe you don't have your best game of all time. But that's their best player over on the outside.
Right.
And you just, you know, he's not going to stop everybody running.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and what is he going to stop? I mean, from chop blocking? Because we're going to throw at a specific time. You know what I mean? We're going to wear him down. So what people have to understand. When they go back and you look at that Tennessee roster, you're going to say, oh, my goodness. They were fully loaded from top to bottom. Jonathan Brown was on that team of defensive. Tennessee was loaded.
Yes.
They had NFL players for the next 3 or 4 years that were
Nebraska
on that roster.
Teams, and the team wins a Natty the next year.
Yep.
That happened
just like
twice.
Florida. Like Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah, just and you like guys beat Florida. The doors off of that. That's, Well, that feels like the perfect note to end on. You know, that's a happy note, beating the doors off of Peyton Manning and Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
And realizing the truth. That you guys would have done the same to Michigan.
Oh, yeah, we would have gotten to it.
I have one more question.
Uh-huh.
Real simple. Which felt better, beating the pants off of Peyton Manning or making Steve Spurrier cry on national television?
Man, I'm going to say for me, because if you remember in 95, I separated my shoulder, and then I re-separated it again before the Oklahoma game that year. And I didn't get a chance to play in that game. So watching that was funny because you know how much of a butt Steve Spurrier is and all the faces, the actions he does. That was cool. Hey, Matty was cool. He was, you know, he was quiet out there. You don't take pleasure in beating up Peyton Manning because he was so nice. He was such a cool the Steve Spurrier thing. Yeah, man. Did you know he would throw that visor down and get the person and rambling and going nuts and. He almost had a blood vessel bust in his head. He was so
that's great. That's my favorite moment too.
That kept the positive vibes flowing too. Well, Kenny, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate you coming on. It's always fun talking with you on Twitter. Thanks again, and have a good weekend, dude.
You too, brother. You guys be safe. All right.
You too.
All
right,
you too, man.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
That'll do it. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Big Red Cobcast, Facebook.com/Cobcast, Patreon.com/Big Red Cobcast. And we're back on Coronation again now, guys. So that'll do it. Batty rides a bus.
Batty rides a bus.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit BoardwalkAudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.
The Sea of Red, Husker Nation.
See what makes Nebraska fans the greatest fans in college football with a new movie directed by Lincoln native Ryan Tweedy.
Through These Gates.
The perfect gift for Husker fans.
Available on DVD now at HuskerFilm.com.